It's the local natives at 842 here at your hometown station, Coho 101. Nice to have you along. It's the Coho Morning Show. We're on the air for Thursday, the 26th of March, 2020. I'm Chris Hansen. Well, we've got our technical issues figured out. And again, very pleased to have 8th District Congresswoman Kim Schreier joining us live on the line this morning. She's at her home in Sammamish, but could be headed back to the other Washington, D.C. That is shortly today, actually, to take a vote. We'll get more information on what that will be about from Congresswoman Schreier as we talk with her about a number of things related, of course, to COVID-19 at the federal level and how is that affecting things here in Washington State. And Kim, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for the time.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
So there's so many things for us to cover this morning. It's hard to know where to start, but let's talk about just the state of our state in general and then how it plugs into what's going on in Washington, D.C. You're only one cog in all of those wheels that are turning, trying to get a handle on the coronavirus pandemic nationwide, let alone here in Washington State. So from your perspective, what's the most important thing I think that you think that folks here in your congressional district across the state, folks listening today, should know about the interface between the two factions, Washington, D.C. and Washington State right now?
Right. Well, I think there's a lot to know. First is that we are trying to get them coordinated, but it has been a very frustrating process, although the eastern part of my district has not been hit hard yet by coronavirus. The western part of this district has been hit really hard. And because of how contagious this is, because of the fact that people, even without symptoms, before symptoms, can transmit this disease very easily, we've really had an exponential rise in cases. And I would anticipate that that will happen everywhere, really, if we don't follow the governor's orders to stay at home. So we've had a lot of struggles here getting adequate protective equipment for our hospital workers. We, of course, have had all kinds of trouble getting enough testing. We got off to a limping start, and it really hasn't caught up yet. And in the meanwhile, we've seen cases just explode, and our hospitals are getting overwhelmed, at least in King County at this point. And hopefully it won't hit rural communities as much, but it is right now. So we as a delegation are on phone, writing letters many times a day with the federal government, trying to coordinate the response between our Department of Health. And I'll tell you, one of the most frustrating things is that right now, because there is so much reliance on private industry and the free market, states are bidding against each other for things like masks and gowns. And that is so highly inappropriate, because now states that may not even have a need are hoarding masks the way that people are hoarding toilet paper. And when that happens, prices go up. There's a scarcity of resources. And it's a moment when we really need FEMA, the administration, to step in and say, we're just going to buy all of the equipment and we will distribute it where it is most needed. And I think it requires a great deal of trust, but I think that is the most efficient way for this to happen.
Well, it's egregious to learn that, certainly, Kim, and you could get me on a soapbox all day about talking about how capitalism is rampant and somewhat out of control in our world, but that would give you a good insight as to perhaps just one little kernel of how we should be more prepared to work together in a crisis like this. I know this is also unprecedented, so it's not surprising that different governors, different jurisdictions, maybe at the local level, scrambling, making actions like that, trying to, again, outbid one another for supplies they deem as critical to keep their folks in safe order as opposed to others. But again, this is a time when we all have to come together, needless to say. And speaking of that note, how is that going in Washington, D.C.? It seems as though from some people's perspectives, save perhaps for the president, who's been highly criticized for his view and how he's handled the pandemic, that this is a time when a lot of your constituents have actually dropped their typical agendas and are really holding hands across the aisle and working together. Is that so, in your opinion?
This is really important. It is really important that we work together. First of all, coronavirus is going to affect all of us, and it may be starting in blue states, but you know what? It's also starting in Congress, and many members of Congress are quarantined. A couple are infected, and I think that everybody is realizing we don't come together as a country and as a Congress, then this country is headed for really quite devastating economic consequences from this, not to mention the public health disaster. And so it's really important at this moment to show leadership and to show that you can work across the aisle and government is not going to fail when the country needs us to step up and rescue. And so we are working together.
8th District Congresswoman Kim Schreier joining us this morning live on the Coho Morning Show. She's at her home in Sammamish right now, but could be headed back to Washington, D.C. very soon today to take a vote. We'll talk about what that vote would be on with you in just a minute, Kim. But on the note of you just mentioned some of your fellow congresspeople and also others maybe in the Senate have contracted COVID-19. Now, what about business at that level? Certainly, no one in the halls of Congress is immune to COVID-19. So how will that continue to function as we go forward if this pandemic worsens, which we are expecting it to, at least in the few weeks ahead?
That's right. I mean, in fact, not only is Congress not immune, Congress is probably more at risk. We're flying across the country twice a week. A third of us are senior citizens. Many have chronic underlying medical conditions. You know, we are like sitting ducks, and we need government to work and not fall apart. And so there has been a history of sort of making Congress the exception to the rule. And I think that when there is a need for people to stay at home and stay safe, we should be modeling that. We should not be breaking that rule. And so we have various ways that we are contemplating doing this that would not require putting people's health and lives at risk and also bringing government to a halt. And some of those ways are voting by unanimous consent, where if we have bills that have such overwhelming support on both sides of the aisle, we can all just give it a nod. Another one is to do a voice vote where people who live locally, say in Maryland or Virginia, Washington, D.C., can be there, can voice a vote. And when it passes with resounding support, then it's done and you don't need a recorded vote like a roll call vote. And the third is to do proxy voting, where some members do show up in Washington, D.C., and other members convey to them how they would like to vote on a given bill. We also need to do the other stuff that we do, right? We're serving our constituents. We can do that from our home districts. We are crafting legislation and debating legislation. We can do that remotely. And so we're just catching up with the 21st century.
Yeah, it's a time when technology, which is so often accused of creating a divide between us, I suppose, is actually going to come in handy for maybe the right purposes finally, because we all seem to be so desperate for some FaceTime when, again, a lot of us have been ordered not to be in close contact with each other for the purposes of personal safety and not spreading the virus. Kim, I also wonder about that vote. You said you might be hopping on a plane today, actually, in a little while to take one in Washington, D.C. We'll see about that. But what would that be in regards to, real quick?
Sure. Well, this is an incredibly large rescue package. Look, coronavirus is a threat like we have not seen in over 100 years. And this poses tremendous public health and economic devastation. And so this is really a way to say, look, we as a government, as a country, are asking people to not work, to stay at home, to protect themselves, to close businesses so that we don't put people face-to-face interacting. But the consequence of that, of course, is that businesses are being threatened. Some may go underwater. We just got a report today that we've had over 3 million unemployment insurance claims. I mean, that is 10% of the U.S. population. This is taking a tremendous economic toll. So what this bill does is it really tries to rescue in various places. For people who work and earn less than $75,000 a year, there will be a cash payout of $1,200 per person. For a couple, $150,000, $2,400 for the couple, plus $500 for each child. That is a one-time payment to just help people pay their bills and get by, you know, at least for a month to be able to put food on the table. Everybody's going to have hardship from this. But then we also really shored up unemployment so that for the first 4 months of unemployment insurance, in addition to what people would normally get, there's another $600 added onto there. And that number was created in order to get the average family in this country to their regular salary for 4 months. And we are hoping that after 4 months, we can start to return to a little bit of normalcy. Of course, nobody has a crystal ball. But the idea is, let's get those unemployment benefits fast and let's make them more robust than usual. It also added 50% more time. Usually in the state, you get 26 weeks of unemployment. We're adding another 13 weeks to make sure that we take care of the people in this country. And then finally, there are big benefits for small businesses, the backbone of our economy, to keep those businesses viable. To extend loan forgiveness and very generous loans to small businesses if they keep their employees on payroll. And then there are benefits for big corporations as well who employ thousands, millions of people to give them loans with conditions and guardrails, of course, to prevent abuse so that they can keep their doors open and help our economy. And then finally, there are benefits for our rural economy to increase food programs, have financial assistance for farmers. And then lastly, sorry, this is a very big bill, $2 trillion, really robust benefits for hospitals because they are really struggling right now to keep up with the demand.
And that is something else we wanted to touch on today, too, Kim, before we let you go. And I appreciate all your time. You have a specific piece of legislation that you've introduced back there related to helping rural hospitals. Can you talk to us about that?
That's right. This is a bill to protect rural hospitals. First of all, they are always just on the verge of not being able to make it. Their margins are incredibly low, if not negative, and we need our rural critical access hospitals to be there because we have rural communities, and that is the only source of care. We introduced this bill even before the $2 trillion package, which provides help to hospitals, because we know there are unique needs. Even though there aren't a lot of cases at this point of COVID-19 in our rural communities, they're already taking a hit because there is a requirement that hospitals stop elective procedures, that we don't want to put people in danger by putting somebody who needs, say, an elective hernia operation in a hospital at the time when they could get exposed to COVID-19. But that is the lifeblood of rural hospitals. And so this gives cash assistance to rural hospitals, $1,000 per patient per day in the hospital extra, and also a one-time payment of whatever the revenue was for that hospital in the first 3 months of 2019. It does some other things, but the idea is let's make sure these hospitals survive.
Very good. Kim, one last thing. We were chatting about this before we jumped on air here. It has to be interesting for you because you possess a certain expertise in communicable diseases, actually, being a pediatrician yourself by trade prior to becoming involved in government. So that has to be you. It has to really be lending a lot to you in the halls of Congress. And as far as your representation for the 8th District here in Washington State, that expertise, you have a better understanding of the actual little virus that's moving around and threatening our livelihoods a little bit better than a lot of other folks back there, I'd guess.
That's right. And you know what? I've been sounding the alarm in Washington, D.C. for weeks now. In fact, I got up and made a pretty impassioned speech to my colleagues who I saw in a room coughing into their hands, wiping their noses and the like, and said, look, guys, I have friends with this. This is weeks ago. I have friends with this. This is a disaster. The idea was just to say, look, it may not be in your community yet, but it will be in your community soon. There's plenty of evidence that this spreads through asymptomatic people. And so if any of you are in here coughing into your hands and wiping your noses, like, it is time immediately to start good habits, to, so you know, to keep away from one another, to not touch your face. And so to everybody out there who may feel right now like it's overkill to stay at home and to not not be interacting socially with other people, you have a blessing of being able to do this early before it really devastates your communities. So please stay safe. Please heed those orders. That means don't put your kids together for play dates, and certainly keep kids away from grandparents. And of course, wash your hands. Don't touch your face.
All right, very good. Again, 8th District Congresswoman Kim Schreier talking to us this morning here on the Coho Morning Show. She is coming to us live from her home in Sammamish, Washington, but could be, again, going back to the halls of Congress in Washington, D.C. at any time today to take a vote on that big $2 trillion rescue package due to the coronavirus pandemic. Kim, I appreciate all the time, all the great information. Stay safe yourself and healthy, and same to you and all your constituents. And I know we'll talk to you again here as the pandemic continues and get an update from you maybe in another couple weeks.
That sounds great. You take care too, Chris.
All right. Thanks so much. Again, that's 8th District Congresswoman Kim Schreier joining us here on the Coho Morning Show. We're already at the 9 o'clock mark here at your hometown station, Coho 101. By the way, in case you missed any portion of our chat today with Congresswoman Schreier, we'll have that for you online at Coho 101 before too long. Heading into the next hour, we get an opportunity to chat with a couple of local businesses, including one that we are very anxious to tell you about. They are new in the Wenatchee Valley, and that would be 4A Coffee. We'll talk with them shortly here in just a few minutes' time. And also one that's been around for a number of years, one actually that I had friends working at in high school when I was around at that age, Larry's Drive-In. There, Hank Graves will talk to us this morning at about 9:30. So looking forward to that. It's all coming up here at the Coho Morning Show as we slide into hour number four on this busy Thursday morning for the 26th of March, 2020.
When a company has enjoyed a great reputation of quality and service for nearly six decades, you can be sure they know what they're doing. Save Mart in Wenatchee has a giant showroom of quality furniture and appliances, all backed by the Valley's best service. Visit Save Mart today.
Locally owned and operated.
Coho 101.
KOHO Leavenworth, Wenatchee. Listen online at coho101.com.